Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The story goes that nobody could untie the great tangled Gordian knot until Alexander the Great came along, thought outside the box, and slashed it in half with his sword. That's the pose Donald Trump is striking on global trade. To bring back manufacturing jobs, he's kept it simple. Go to Twitter, scold and shame corporate America, threaten tariffs, promise reduced taxes and regulation. And before he's even made it to the White House, he's claiming success. This week with Ford. This hour on Point, can Donald Trump's arm-twisting ways bring manufacturing back to the U.S. in a big way? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is this window dressing or the real deal? Can the Trump approach put a game-changing number of manufacturing jobs back in America? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Early December, here was Donald Trump at the Carrier Air Conditioning Plant in Indiana, said it's not going to happen, this outflow of manufacturing jobs.
Companies are not going to leave the United States anymore without consequences. Not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. The bully pulpit right there. And here this week, CNN's Poppy Harlow talking with Ford CEO Mark Fields on Tuesday, asking him whether his company had decided to cancel plans to build a plant in Mexico, whether that was an independent business decision or a response to pressure from the president-elect. Well, maybe. Listen here. It was a little of both.
Well, when we make decisions like this as a company, we look at, first we do what's right for our business. This makes sense for our business. And we look at all factors, including what we view as a more positive U.S. manufacturing business environment under President-elect Trump.
We want to jump in and look at what could or could not happen under a President Trump, what's already happened under the President-elect with his tweets and arm-twisting. Joining me first from New York is Heather Long, senior markets and economy writer for CNN Money. Heather, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
This Ford deal, can you explain what happened here? A $1.6 billion plant. They were in the process of getting it set up in Mexico. Now it's not going to happen. Is this a Trump effect, Heather?
That is definitely the question of the week, how much of involvement Trump had. And I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind here. Number one, on the campaign trail, one of my favorite lines from Trump is he claimed he would be the greatest jobs president that God ever created.
Whoa, that's
so
big. That's big.
Clear.
God himself.
Yes, that's very clear that jobs are a key focus of his message, and he wants to show he's delivering on that. He really went hard after Ford all throughout the campaign trail. He called this deal horrible when they announced it in the spring that they were going to invest $1.6 billion in a new plant in Mexico. Now, Trump really made this sound like, wait a minute, you're taking jobs from the United States and putting them in Mexico. Ford pushed back really hard on that. Bill Ford, the great-grandson of the founder of Ford, called it infuriating to listen to Trump on this because Ford wasn't planning to cut U.S. jobs here. They were simply planning to invest more in Mexico, but no jobs would be lost in the United States. However, Trump kept hammering them on Twitter in campaign speeches, and so after he was elected, now suddenly we have them come out here on Tuesday morning, and they say, oh, we've changed our mind. We're not going to invest in Mexico. We're not going to do that $1.6 billion. Instead, we're going to invest $700 million to expand an existing plant in Michigan and hire 700 new U.S. workers. So Trump is thrilled. He's he's out there saying this is great news, exactly what we want. But Ford is trying to walk this very, very fine line. We saw the CEO when he was talking to CNN, Mark Fields. He says this is a vote of confidence in Trump and the Trump economy, what they're trying to do with lowering taxes. and creating a more favorable business climate. But at the same time, the CEO was also trying to say that this was a independent business decision. They didn't sit down with Trump and sort of hammer out a deal over a conference table, that they looked at the numbers and they said, gee, small cars are not selling very well here in the United States. That's been a trend for a while. We know Americans like to drive SUVs and trucks. And so to save costs, they wanted to shift production of small cars to Mexico. And so in their eyes, they're simply saying, it's a better decision now not to continue to invest heavily in the small car production. Instead, we want to go big on what we think is the future, the autonomous vehicles, the hybrid vehicles, those electrified vehicles. And so we're going to expand our plant here in the United States to
so
do that.
So 700 new jobs, they're saying, to do that in the U.S. instead of a $1.6 billion plant in Mexico. Whether that's a Trump effect, I guess people will debate for a while. You could hear the Ford CEO there, Heather, sounding almost eager to have the posture of some credit for Trump. Are they currying favor here? Is that what's going on?
That's definitely one way to read into it. I mean, the Ford CEO was pushing back on giving full credit to Trump. I will say this is kind of interesting. When Ford put out, it's a four-page press release about this, they actually do not mention Trump. So that's different than what we saw, for instance, that week between Christmas and New Year when Sprint made its announcement. Sprint actually, in its press release, mentioned the president-elect explicitly by name. So, and you had something similar in the Carrier when the Carrier announcement happened. So it's a little bit of an interesting line for Ford. It's clear they were pressured by Trump because of all the public announcements that had been made, the public pressure on Ford by Trump. Even, at one point, Trump called them horrible. But it remains to be seen if this is part of some sort of greater scheme that Ford is trying to do with the new president-elect.
Sprint's talking about jobs here, not necessarily manufacturing, but jobs. They may have other reasons to curry favor with the new administration around regulation. Trump has also gone after GM, very specifically, very tough, talking about their manufacturing or assembly of the Chevrolet Cruze in Mexico. And he has tweeted, make in the USA or pay big border tax. What's going on there? What's being threatened, Heather?
That's right. It's the exact same threat that he made to Ford throughout the campaign trail. And that is, if you're going to build these cars in Mexico and then sell them in the United States, bring them across the border and sell them in the United States, we're going to put this big tariff, which is another word for a tax, on those cars. So we're going to make them a heck of a lot more expensive. You know, you thought you were saving all this money by going to Mexico, but we're going to change that math right away. He threatened as high as 40%. He hasn't really given a number on GM, but a lot of people think that 35 is a number he's thrown out a lot.
Big number.
Huge, huge tax. The question is, can he do it? A lot of the trade experts that we talked to, it's a little murky in the law, but it seems that it would be very, very difficult to just put a tariff on one company for the sole reason of making something in Mexico and bringing it across the lines into the United States. So I think we feel that that's pretty unlikely to be exactly how it happens. That said, and they're clearly worried about it, and I think you're right. I think that may have been a reason that Ford was making this big announcement.
We're still waiting for terms of the Carrier deal, the air conditioning company out of Indiana, that where he went and talked about the jobs that would be saved there. Indiana giving tax credits, the $7 million in tax credits to Carrier, but we haven't seen the full deal that will come out of that yet. Has he chosen autos to go after because they're vulnerable on the marketing front? Because, you know, you don't want consumers to be hearing from the president or president-elect of the United States that you're not good American citizens.
I won't claim to know entirely the mind of Trump, but I think you said it at the beginning, and that is, for him, one of the big things he's really hit Obama hard on, the Obama economy hard, is that, sure, President Obama, you claim that you've created millions of jobs. 11 million looks like it's going to be about the final number under Obama. But he claims those aren't good-paying jobs. In Trump's mind, America really needs these good-paying jobs, and that's he sees as manufacturing. as these blue-collar jobs, the type of jobs you can support a family on. I was struck just looking this week at a typical employee in Michigan at an auto plant is making $28 an hour on average, you know, give or take, $20 to $30 an hour. You look at Mexico, that those employees are making about $5 an hour. So, you know, again, Trump is really going after both autos and in the case of Carrier, it's this hard manufacturing.
But can he spread this around? I mean, those same U.S. auto manufacturers have to compete on a global stage. If they bring it all back home, can they really be competitive?
Yeah, that's a huge debate. And I think one of the key facts that I always keep in mind is U.S. manufacturing output, so the actual amount and value of goods we produce, is high. It's been growing the past several years, almost to an all-time high. What's been falling is manufacturing employment. So while we've seen this upsurge in the output that we're making, the goods made in America, we don't need as many workers to do it. And the reason why is technology. So the automation and robots are taking the place of a lot of these jobs that were once done by people. And it's interesting with Carrier. So the Carrier, those 800 jobs or so that are going to be saved in the factory in Indianapolis, if you look closely at what Carrier said, they actually said they're making an investment in the plant, which will include some technology and automation. So it's not clear if all those 800 jobs are still going to be there in a few years. Some could be replaced by robots.
Oh, my gosh. Put American robots first. Maybe the slogan soon. Do you hear a consensus out there when people in business and manufacturing listen to Donald Trump about more high-paying U.S. manufacturing jobs on a big scale, coming here, staying here, coming back here? Do people see it as a possibility, or they're shaking their heads and saying, no, ain't going to happen?
It's an open debate. I would say the majority of people think that you just can't reverse globalization, and even more so, you can't reverse the trend to technology. As a matter of fact, I did some reporting over the holiday break. A lot of people are saying, look, you think this is bad in the manufacturing sector. You know, U.S. has lost about 5 million manufacturing jobs since 2000. Just wait. Soon, we're already starting to see robots that can do medical procedures, that can do surgeries. You know, so more and more of what we used to consider these highly skilled jobs or these service sector jobs are also going to be threatened by robots.
Wow. Watch out, Doc. It could be you, too. Heather Long at CNN Money. It's great to have you with us from New York. Thanks so much for joining us, Heather.
Sure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American manufacturing and how much Donald Trump can bring home, keep home, create at home. We're looking at plants and we're looking at jobs. Ford saying this week it will not go ahead with plans for a $1.6 billion plant in Mexico. It will put $700 million into Michigan and 700 jobs will be created there. Donald Trump on his election win thank you tour, here he was in Fayetteville, North Carolina, early December, saying he'll go to war for American jobs. Well, I guess he means hypothetical war, but here it is.
We will defeat the enemy on jobs, and we will defend American jobs. We're going to defend American jobs. And we have to look at it almost as a war, because that's what's happened to us. That's what's happened to our workers. These are great people.
How far can you really go with arm twisting and tweets? We'll see. I mean, he went to Carrier. They announced they'd keep some jobs here. We just heard Heather Long with CNN Money saying a bunch of their investment may go in ultimately to robots. But these announcements make excitement. Here was a plant worker with Carrier in Indianapolis. Paul Roll had his job there 17 years, told a local TV reporter what it felt like to learn he was not going to lose his job after all.
It was just a lot of excitement, shock, disbelief. So excited I couldn't even fall asleep until about midnight.
Unlike many union members, Roll was a Trump supporter throughout his campaign.
It was just really great to see him come through with probably his biggest promise of his campaign to keep jobs in America. And 3 weeks after he gets elected, he's already doing what he said he was going to do.
How real is it? How far can it go? You can join the conversation this hour after Carrier and Ford. Does it look to you like Donald Trump can bring the jobs home, keep them home? And how far can the Twitter arm-twisting tactic take him? Are you happy to see him give American manufacturers a poke in the ribs? And will he, should he, bring out the big guns? Tariffs? Is that legal? Is that wise? Will that work? Joining us today from Chicago is Phil Levy. He's an expert in global trade and manufacturing, senior fellow on the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. He was a senior economist for trade with President Bush's Council of Economic Advisors. Phil Levy, thanks very much for joining us from Chicago.
Hi, it's good to be with you.
Good to have you here. And Alicia Sasser Modestino joins me in the studio, labor economist at Northeastern University School of Public Policy, Urban Affairs, Department of Economics there. Alicia, it's great to have you back. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Phil, take us right to it. Here's Donald Trump. He talks big, he tweets big, and now we've got this Ford announcement this week. And people may be saying, wow, maybe he can jawbone, bully pulpit American manufacturing into staying home, coming home. You know, happy days are here again. What do you see, Phil?
I see some pretty good showmanship. He has a long ways to go if he's going to actually turn anything around. And I think going back to your original question, this is more window dressing than it is the real thing. One number just to put things into – or a couple numbers to put things in perspective. If you look at over the last year for which we have data, manufacturing jobs, on a monthly basis, we gain about 135,000 manufacturing jobs in this country and lose about 137,000. So that's a lot of turnover in the market. And so if we're going to get really excited every time somebody recycles a 700-job announcement and gives a tip of the hat to Trump, it'll make for good politics. I'm not sure it's going to fundamentally change the economic situation.
Alicia, can Donald Trump create a different mindset where companies are either afraid to go abroad because they'll get called out by the president of the United States, or, and we haven't seen this part yet, the tax changes and regulation changes – and maybe penalties of tariff are so significant that they say, okay, we'll just keep it here. And it would be more than window dressing. Could you see that possibility here?
Well, I think the best case scenario is that Trump might be changing some of the culture or the norms around this for CEOs and for companies, especially in the manufacturing sector, to at least think about the appearance of keeping American jobs here. But I think in the long run, he really just can't repeal the laws of economics, right? So companies are profit seekers. If U.S. labor is costly, they're either going to outsource or automate. And so if you've cut off the route to outsourcing by imposing tariffs or by shaming them publicly, then we're going to see more automation. And I think, you know, we saw that very bluntly said by the CEO of Carrier that, you know, their investment would be towards automation. And specifically, they said, we're going to automate to drive the cost down so that we can continue to be competitive.
Wow. So save some jobs today, but we're really talking robot future there in a way.
Or even what kinds of jobs are you going to save, right? So I think even if you do see an increase in manufacturing employment, it's not going to be your typical factory floor job of the worker that got laid off, say, 5 years ago or before the Great Recession. It's going to be a lean manufacturing skilled type of position that's going to require some training that workers who are not employed right now probably don't have.
What about the tariff threat, Phil? I mean, that, you know, a tweet is one thing. But you start talking about 35, 40% tariffs, that's a huge club. Could President Donald Trump actually wield it against GM or anybody else?
Well, there is some research showing that he could impose some tariffs. Whether he can impose them on individual companies is a question.
And this would be like tariffs? Is that a weird thing? Like, or it, when they try to bring it back in, if they build it in Mexico, they'd impose it at that point? I'm sorry.
Right. You'd have all kinds of questions you'd have to ask. Is this just on cars being brought back in? What about all the auto parts? Mm-hmm. And one of the fallacies that underlies a lot of this is the idea that cars are made either in Mexico or in the United States. In fact, you get these companies producing all over the world and bringing in parts and shuffling around. There's some very good work that shows really some of our top importers are also our top exporters. So if you shut them down as importers, you're not going to do good things for the U.S., things like trade balance that President-elect Trump likes to mention all the time.
I mean, but a tariff is a big deal. If he suddenly was putting a tariff on American manufacturers trying to bring products back home, 35 or 40%, that gets people's attention in a hurry. Alicia, does that change the calculus? Can you force people to bring it home, keep it home, the manufacturing, the jobs?
Well, I mean, I think it's a matter of how that tariff gets imposed, as you mentioned, right? Is it on the finished product? Is it on the parts that are included in that product? I mean, you could imagine that one way companies could deal with this would be to still be using parts from abroad like they do now, but assembling the finished product here in the United States. I'm not really sure how that would be treated on a 35% tariff, mm-hmm. whether or not would that be seen as something that's made in the U.S. or something that's made abroad if you're using a lot of parts that go into the final product from other places? And that's how a lot of manufacturers now operate, right? So things that need to be mass produced that are very easy to produce are produced elsewhere in China, India, Vietnam, et cetera. But the skilled parts that need to be made in the assembly, that is done more in the United States. So will we see a shift more towards that? And again, those are more skilled jobs than what I think most people have in mind when they think about keeping a factory floor type manufacturing job here in the United States.
Because the factory floor was the place where an American without a whole lot of education could go and earn a decent wage.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think what we heard before about, you know, manufacturing wages, there's a premium. Manufacturers earn typically $25 an hour compared to $18 an hour in retail. And those are the kinds of jobs that people are thinking of. And, you know, I think one reason why politicians are so focused on manufacturing is that it really embodies what, you know, the blue collar middle class feels like has been lost, right? A good paying job with mm-hmm. benefits for mm-hmm. someone who doesn't have a college degree. And it's not necessarily the case that these new manufacturing jobs require a college degree, but they do require more
significant training.
They require training, and they also require a different mindset. So I've done a number of interviews with manufacturers here in Massachusetts about mm-hmm. their hiring and the skills they're looking for. And they're really looking for people, not just with some degree of mechanical ability and knowledge of basic math skills, but they're looking for workers who want to work, who want to learn, who are willing to train and retrain, and who will take the initiative to become more efficient because their business has to change and adapt very rapidly in this very competitive environment. And they need workers who are going to change and adapt with them.
But who? Nobody thinks they can just sit back on their haunches these days, just show up 9 to 5 at a factory, do some dumb, turn a wrench and make a good living. It's a two-way street, right? Maybe he could bring jobs. I don't know if he can, but American workers are still going to have to step up and perform competitively to keep those jobs here. But the bottom line is, I think what we heard in the campaign was, we want good-paying jobs in this country for lots of people, and manufacturing is kind of the symbol of that. So can it deliver that, Alicia?
Well, I think it's going to be hard to deliver that because, as we've seen over the past 40 years, output at U.S. factories is up 150%. It's 36% of GDP. It's double the output of any of the other big sectors. But we've seen that manufacturing jobs have plunged by 30%. And so the fact of the matter is we're just using more technology to be mm-hmm. able to produce an even greater amount of stuff with fewer workers. And so some of those workers are going to have to be seeking jobs in the other places where employment is growing, in places like healthcare and education, in some of those, if you will, girly girl type positions rather than the manly man manufacturing we saw in the past.
Not Macy's. They're going to lay off 10,000 people we hear today. So I don't know exactly where that is. And some of those jobs are good paying, but others are not. Jobs, manufacturing jobs on the table here. Donald Trump talking a lot about it. Ford saying this week, okay, but how far does this go? Phil Levy in Chicago, please stand by. And Alicia Sasser-Modestino with me in the studio. Lots of callers here. Larry in Detroit. Larry, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I want to point out a couple of things.
Okay.
First of all, the auto manufacturers in the U.S. are the greatest marketing companies in the world. They convinced us that there's a difference between Cadillac, Pontiac, Chevy.
Right. Okay. True.
All built in the same plant by the same guys, and on a different day, they slap a different name tag.
What do you take from that, Larry?
So they look at Trump as a marketing guy just like them, and they all understand it's about how things look. So he can pressure them to do things because he knows what looks bad for them. It doesn't matter if it's really bad. It gets action.
Is it going to work? Will it mean more manufacturing jobs in this country over time, Larry?
I think it will. I think you already saw he's impacting the interaction with manufacturing and with industry by what he did with the new Air Force One program, where he got Boeing to decide that they're going to change the price on things before he's even in the job. And then the other thing to remember is Detroit has a long memory. And the executives in Detroit remember when Obama came in, to revitalize or bring GM out of bankruptcy and basically fire the CEO of GM. And that's not something that's forgotten by them or forgotten by people around here, the fact that, you know, there was influence there that wasn't considered positive, and it impacted their job. So they're going to rather work with a guy who thinks like them than what they've had to deal with for the last 8 years.
But, Larry, can they defy globalization gravity? I mean, you've got lower wages all over the place.
I think you can. I think globalization has raised the boat for everyone. And what you're seeing, as a guy who's worked in IT for my entire career and have sent jobs to India and brought them back, you find out that those service jobs, those higher level jobs that your
yep.
previous speaker discussed, those shift back and forth across borders, but it's also discovered that the cheapest source isn't the best source. And I've seen a lot of companies take jobs, Microsoft and some other huge IT organizations.
Yeah. We know some of that has turned around. Larry, I appreciate your perspective there from Detroit. I'm very glad to have it. I want to get a little more here from North Carolina, Lincolnton, North Carolina. James is calling. James, you're on the air. Thanks a lot for calling. What do you see, James?
Hi, Tom. I'd just like to see the plants built in America where the jobs would be available, even if it is automated plants. I would give the opportunity for the higher skilled and the more training. You know, if the plants are not here, then you don't have them jobs to go after.
Yeah. I hear you loud and clear, James. Phil Levy, rather have the plants here, even if they're automated. At least they're here. Somebody here can build them. Somebody here can learn how to run them.
Well, I think that's right, and we've seen that. As Alicia said, the U.S. manufacturing output has been quite high. Those plants are being built here. One of the real concerns is if you threaten the kind of tariffs that Trump has been talking about, it may not look as attractive to build plants in the U.S. You may be afraid that you're going to be subject to a tweet if you change your plans later on.
Yeah. I mean, not only that, Alicia, I'm reading here, it's not just the lower wages in Mexico that have made it attractive. Mexico has trade agreements with some 44 countries that let the goods go pretty freely back and forth. We only have those with 20 countries. And Donald Trump is threatening sort of maybe to clamp even further down on that. I mean, the auto manufacturers have seen if the product comes out of Mexico, they can sell it to the world more easily than from this country.
Yeah, I think that's actually the bigger concern is the tariffs that might be on the inputs that are coming from other countries. Everything from, you know, apparel and fabric to electrical components. I mean, those are the things that manufacturers here are getting from abroad, the things that can be easily and cheaply mm-hmm. made and mass produced. And then they're using them in a skilled production here to make a product in the United States. So I think that's actually the bigger threat to jobs is if you cut off that supply chain.
And if you end up with an end product here, but you can't ship it abroad as easily, sell it abroad as easily, because you've got a more defensive trade posture than, let's say, Mexico, right across the border. Alicia Sasser-Modestino, please stand by, and Phil Levy in Chicago. Peter Goodman joins us right now from New York, international economics correspondent for the New York Times. He's just spent several days in Juarez, Mexico, talking with workers and bosses at the maquiladoras there, the factories across the border there. He's written very interestingly about global supply chains recently. Peter Goodman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Do you see a Trump administration as having the capacity to change where the manufacturing jobs go in a world where, as you've written so compellingly, the global supply chain is very intricate and it's spread all over the place? Can Trump pull a significant number of that those jobs back here?
Well, it's going to be very difficult. I mean, this is a sort of reality television version of economic policy. I mean, mm-hmm. you can identify the high-profile companies, the Carriers, the Fords. You can clearly use the bully pulpit, Twitter, shame, to generate announcements and photo ops. But, you know, in the net, as many of your guests have already discussed,
yeah.
you're flying into the wind in terms of automation because, you know, you have to separate out the question of can you bring production back to the United States? We have production in the United States. Production is growing, but we have fewer people doing it because of robots. And then there's the question of, I mean, can you even bring more production, regardless of whether it's robots or humans getting the jobs? And if you try to do that by doing things like imposing tariffs, or shaming corporations, you run the risk that you will disrupt the supply chain. There are an awful lot of manufacturers who are employing Americans today in places like Michigan and Wisconsin and North Carolina who rely upon access to goods that they bring in from around the world, not least China and Mexico.
Are you talking a trade war scenario there, Peter, when you say disrupt the supply chain or what?
Well, I mean, you don't have to go full-blown trade war. I mean, simply creating the uncertainty around what rules are going to prevail, what sorts of cases this administration will bring to the World Trade Organization, putting aside the fact that this incoming administration has actually threatened to withdraw from the World Trade Organization. I mean, that injects uncertainty into the boardroom where executives have to figure out where they're going to invest their capital and where they're going to employ people and buy materials and hire marketers to do what marketers do. I mean, I was in Holland, Michigan, on the shores of Lake Michigan.
Peter, hold that thought. We've got a break right in front of us. You've already got the idea of reality TV, economic policy in our minds. Peter Goodman at the New York Times, please stand by. Phil Levy in Chicago, Alicia Sastre-Modestino with me in the studio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Rocket Mortgage provides a transparent online process that helps you understand all the details of your home loan. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the right mortgage solution for you. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American manufacturing and how much Donald Trump can bring home, keep home, create at home. We're looking at plants and we're looking at jobs with Phil Levy. He's a senior fellow on the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Alicia Sastre-Modestino is with us from Northeastern University's School of Public Policy and Urban Affairs. Peter Goodman is here from the New York Times. He's been looking very closely at the intricacies of the global supply chain and just how dense that is and how tricky it is when you start really trying to move the pieces around. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Are you happy to see President-elect Trump give American manufacturers a sort of good poke in the ribs here? Will we end up with trade wars and high prices at Walmart? Is this going to be window dressing, a win here, a win there, the big trend unchanged? What is the way to create more good-paying American jobs in the global supply chain? What's real? What's realistic here? What's not? Ford's CEO Mark Fields on CNN on Tuesday saying, hey, well, he's marketing is the word we heard out of Detroit, but he was talking of a kind of friendly game toward Donald Trump, open as they made their announcement. Here was the Ford CEO.
He has said very clearly he wants to create a very positive business environment for businesses to invest in the U.S., and we'll have to see how that rolls out. But again, this is a vote of confidence that, you know, we feel very good about that kind of direction and in making these kind of investment decisions.
Is this reality TV, economic policy, or something more? A lot of callers weighing in. Paul in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Paul, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for even speaking to me this time.
Sure.
I want to say, on the carrier question, as a former laid-off, terminated carrier employee, I wish they could have saved my 700 jobs. I'd love to be retiring tomorrow at making $14 an hour. But carrier is not just as part of an international group. How are they going to handle, does he plan to go after that? And Ford, GM, and the rest of them, they kind of need to build some, you know, are they going to help shut down the BMW plant here in Spartanburg County? Or what's going to happen on that? I'll just take your responses off on the air.
Peter, I guess this comes back to global supply chains, and yeah, these companies are part of a big international web of suppliers. When you went out to look at that, take Carrier or take BMW, anybody else, do they have, how much flexibility do they have when it comes to bringing big numbers of jobs back to this country?
Well, in the immediate term, most manufacturers in the United States rely on suppliers around the world for things that are not so easily made. You can't just snap your fingers and suddenly make motors that are now principally made in China in the United States. You can eventually.
Yep.
I mean, if you decide that that's your wholesale priority to focus on individual goods and individual industries, but there's an immediate cost. And, you know, to give you this example, I mean, I was in Holland, Michigan, in this former heating and air conditioning plant that shut down when the company moved to Mexico about a decade ago.
Okay.
And there's a guy I spent the day with, Chuck Reed, who's created, you know, 40 jobs at this plant in the last few years, making these chairs that are these recliner chairs, sort of Lazy Boy style chairs going into movie theaters.
Yep.
And he's using more American componentry than any of his competitors. I mean, he's really trying to employ Americans, draw on the American supply chain, but there's some stuff that he simply can't get economically around him. He brings in fabric from China. The basic electronics that go into the motor come from China. Some stuff comes in from Hungary that probably has components from China. And if you were to suddenly slap a 45% across-the-board tariff on Chinese imports, as Mr. Trump has threatened, what you would inevitably do is create an opportunity for competitors to this factory in places like Mexico, Colombia, Australia. I mean, Mr. Trump didn't get elected president in any of those places.
Yep.
To draw on Chinese suppliers and then undercut the business of this factory. Now, there's 40 jobs there. It's not much of a photo op to talk about, you know, protecting those jobs. But this, by and large, is how the American economy works. I mean, those auto plants in South Carolina, in Kentucky, in Michigan, they draw largely on supplies coming in from Mexico. Those Mexican suppliers are crucial to maintaining jobs that are happening today in the United States.
Phil Levy in Chicago, what do you see when you look out into the future? I mean, we know China is very dense with manufacturing now, including some very sophisticated manufacturing. Look at your Apple iPhone and a whole lot of other things that are made there now. When you look out 10, 20 years into the future, more, do you see the United States as a major manufacturing hub? Do you see the trend line up, down, even if it's automated, as one of our callers said? Is it here or elsewhere?
Well, it's an excellent question. I think the U.S. is currently a successful manufacturer and will continue to be a successful manufacturer. China has absolutely carved out a niche for itself in certain products.
That's a big niche.
It is a big niche, but it's actually seeing some of the same trends that you're seeing here with a shift towards more automation with rising costs. I think, you know, there's an excellent point that your caller made, which is, are we, if you're going to have American firms succeed, are we putting them at a disadvantage relative to their international competitors? They're not just competing for the U.S. market. They're competing for global markets. And your caller made the point about BMW. If American firms can only use American parts, but international firms can choose to either use American or parts from abroad, that's the kind of thing that could really damage American competitiveness.
If you just start getting in there and what – it's funny because this is the kind of thing, Alicia, that Republicans have always just howled about when the government starts coming in and trying to micromanage, which is what you could call Donald Trump when he calls out an individual company in a tweet and really goes after them and threatens. That's micromanagement.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the criticisms, the early criticisms we heard about is that, you know, Trump is picking winners and losers, right? He's looking to make these deals. And frankly, the scale of what he's doing is just not sustainable, right? So he would have to make something like 800 more carrier deals to be able to equal the manufacturing job creation we saw under the Obama administration.
He's going to get a cramp in his Twitter finger.
Absolutely. What I'm hoping is that he's going to combine this pageantry that we've seen with some kind of actual policy. I hope that there's somebody in the administration who is going to make good on what these manufacturers are hoping for, which is a positive business climate, right? So, I mean, the best thing that Republicans...
Does that mean lower taxes and less regulation? Is that, that's the mantra we hear?
That is the mantra we hear. I don't know exactly how, you know, it translates into a positive business climate, but that is what manufacturers are looking for. I feel like Ford is trying to pay it forward in some sense by... You know,
remember us when things start.
That's right. Here, you know, we're giving you your photo op moment. Now let's see if you can deliver on these other things.
But
for
what
us.
Is a positive business climate? We hear that all the time. I mean, lower taxes. I'm sure businesses would like that. Less regulation. But what's net positive there? We don't want them dumping junk into our rivers and lakes, if that's what that means.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one one part of it, right, is the corporate tax structure. I mean, that's something he's talked about, is reducing the corporate tax. I don't know if we want to go to 15%.
That's his. Congress says 20. He says 15.
Yeah, it seems quite unsustainable to go to 15% and actually pay for the infrastructure that he's talking about. But, you know, the other thing are things around regulations, not necessarily around environmental regulations per se, but I'm sure the automakers are looking for, you know, an ease in terms of regulations around emissions for new cars and things like that. Can we slow down some of these regulations? I'm not sure if that's a net positive for climate change and things like that, but I'm sure from a business perspective, that's what they're looking for. But I think in general, you know, what Trump is doing right now is keeping existing jobs here with the carrier deal, with the Ford announcement. And again, those are not the jobs of the future in manufacturing. The jobs of the future in manufacturing are people who can operate machinery, multiple machines at the same time. And so I think that he's going to have to back that up with some actual policies that are going to help promote entrepreneurs and businesses who are going to create the jobs of the future, along with training workers for those jobs.
We know he's good at reality TV. I mean, he's got a proven track record on that. But the rest, beyond the pageantry, we'll see. Mary in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Thank you for calling, Mary. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I think this is just a big political ploy. I think this is a bunch of Republican CEOs that are trying to make Trump look good, the Republican Party look good, and continue to fool the public. And just like with the housing market, eventually the bubble's going to burst.
You don't believe it long term?
No.
Got it, Mary. Straight up skepticism there from Milwaukee. Peter Goodman, you've just been down in Mexico. I mean, we saw the Mexican peso really take a hit after this Ford announcement. There seems to be some genuine concern around Mexico that it could change the profile of manufacturing done there, and presumably that means shift some balance back toward the USA, Peter.
Well, the last part I take issue with. I mean, there definitely is concern. I mean, you talk to ordinary workers in these maquiladoras, and they are concerned. I talked to several migrant workers who are thinking about going back to southern Mexico where they came from. They're earning, you know, about $2.50 a day and struggling to pay their bills, and now they don't pretend to understand the finer points of foreign exchange or trade policy.
But you're saying their loss is not necessarily a U.S. gain?
Well, look, I mean, if you disrupt that kind of production where you're paying people $2.50 to, you know, wield a soldering gun to make simple connections on a circuit board on a component that's eventually going to end up in a BMW, that works probably not coming back to the United States. It might go to China. It might go to Vietnam. It might go to Central America. I mean, if you disrupt the incoming Chinese supply chain, I mean, we already see evidence that Chinese manufacturers, and this is a trend that's been unfolding for years because of rising labor costs in China, they will shift production to places like Vietnam, to Indonesia, to other places in Southeast Asia. I mean, just because we halt the import of goods in the global supply chain coming into the United States doesn't mean that suddenly Americans are going to start making, you know, tube socks in the Carolinas again.
Yeah, but what about at the higher end? I mean, I don't know exactly what was said, but the word was out that Donald Trump was talking with Tim Cook at Apple about trying to bring manufacturing of some of these very sophisticated Apple products back to the United States. You looked at the supply chain. Is that a dream on thing, or could that be done, Peter?
Well, that could certainly be done, again, at the level of the photo op. I mean, in terms of...
We don't care about photo ops. At least we hope we're not driven just by photo ops. Yeah.
En masse, I mean, what do people want to pay for their iPhones? And what happens to the competitiveness of the iPhone against other products? I mean, it's very difficult to see that suddenly the whole thing is going to be made in the United States. Moreover, I mean, why did this production go to China? I mean, in part because we don't want pollutants landing in our streams. We don't want air that gives us cancer. I mean, a lot of this stuff has gone overseas because Americans are reaping the benefits of not only cheap labor but also and cheap consumer products, but cleaner air. I mean, it's not so simple to just suddenly snap your fingers and say we're going to bring back 1950s-style manufacturing to the United States.
Yeah. On the other hand, Alicia, I mean, you call it pageantry, but for a long time, these jobs were going overseas like crazy, and nobody in the American power structure really seemed to say bupkis about it. There was almost a celebration of the globalization. I mean, it was all about free trade, and here we go, and this is going to be awesome. You can't blame Americans, some Americans who feel like they lost a lot in that process from perhaps appreciating a change in tone around this, even if, well, I mean, of course, they're going to want meat and potatoes ultimately, but a change in tone may feel like a relief.
Absolutely. I think one of the big lessons we learned is we really didn't handle globalization very well in this country. And so the benefits of globalization are very diffuse, right? There are lower prices for everyone. There's less damage to our environment here because products are made elsewhere. But the harm is very concentrated. If you have lost your job, your manufacturing job that paid $30 an hour, you don't care if you're paying less for your iPhone or less for your imported car, right? You care very much about not having that job. And moreover, I think, you know, some people have pointed out that the same people who have lost their jobs are the ones that are benefiting from, you know, welfare programs or Medicaid or Obamacare, things like that. But they don't want that. They want a job. They want the dignity that came with the job. They want the satisfaction of coming home for, at the end of the day, and providing for their families. And so when you have that concentrated loss, I can see how this message resonates very well with them. And I think that, you know, we need to have done a better job of mitigating that pain in this country.
Phil Levy, there in Chicago, think with us for just a second here about the net potential effect of a Trump approach. I mean, he's got the tweets. We've already seen those as president-elect. As president, with the Republican Congress, he could go at a change in taxation on corporations, at regulations, at a positive business climate. If he throws everything at it, what kind of net effect can you imagine for good-paying manufacturing jobs in this country, Phil?
We have good-paying manufacturing jobs in this country. The problem is they require a fairly, as you were discussing earlier, a fairly high level of skill that they're not available to some of the people who used to have that path to a better life. So those things will encourage the U.S. to be good at manufacturing, especially if he doesn't ruin the trade climate. But we have that now. I think if you want to do
things— So you're saying this is as good as it gets, America? Shut up, be happy?
No. I think what I'm saying is you got to go to the root of the problem, okay. That this kind of stuff is snake oil. The root of the problem is a mismatch between the demands of these jobs and the skills of some of the workers. That just as Alicia and others were saying, you may have been replaced by a robot. Now you need to know how to program the robot.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do that, there are high-paying jobs out there. Any programs that go after that will be a step in the right direction. This kind of stuff is window dressing.
Peter Goodman, net effect of a full Trump package over, let's say, 4 years, what can you picture?
Well, we don't really know what he's going to do. And so that's very hard to predict. But if he does follow through on threat of across-the-board tariffs, renegotiating NAFTA, I mean, heaven forbid, actually pulling out of WTO,
yep.
We could be in a very, very dark place. A lot of people who have high-paying manufacturing jobs today could lose them. A handful of well-placed companies that are near television cameras could gain or keep some,
yeah.
And we could find ourselves with tougher times.
And what about prices that we'd be paying for things? Could you end up getting a good job and paying two or three times more for some product at Walmart?
Well, that's pretty unlikely. I mean, for the simple reason that there are a lot of low-cost manufacturers that are beyond reach of Trump's wrath. I mean, he's not talking about Vietnam. He's not talking about Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
He's not talking about India and Bangladesh and lots of other places where goods are still made by large numbers of relatively low-skilled people who will work cheap. That part doesn't go away.
Trump's wrath. You're a good phrase maker, Peter. We're going to keep that piece in mind as well as we go forward here. We see the pageantry. You've all helped us position ourselves to think about what actually unfolds here, and we're really grateful for that. Peter Goodman at the New York Times. Terrific to have you. Thanks for coming on, Peter.
Thanks very much.
Phil Levy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Thank you very much for being with us, Phil.
Thanks for having me.
And Alicia Sasser-Modestino from Northeastern University with me right here in the studio. Thanks so much for coming in, Alicia.
Thanks, Tom.
Good luck to everybody on the job front. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.